ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनाशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम शिष्टम् अनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रचमुरूपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवराहो राधिकमदावसम्। प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीतकृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं पवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौले राज्ञमालद्युते निराजितापदपाङ्कजन्ता अजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणां संश्रयामि। अनर्पिताचरीं चिरात् करुणयावतीर्णाकलहो समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं। हारीपुरता सुन्दराद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपिता सदा हृदये कन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः। अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदातो सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षो विश्वम्बरो धियावरो जुगधार्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो। लादिनी शक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गासुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमोऽस्तु ते। हे कृष्ण करुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिकाकान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते। राधे वृन्दावनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनी कृपाया निजपादब्जा दस्यान्मयं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षये क्षिप्तष्टाकमादितरङ्गमाधे कृपामयित्वं शरणं प्रपन्नं वन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दं। वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दं। श्री सच्चिनंदन गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय। बोध्य वैष्णव गुरु परंपरा की जय। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। श्री कार्तिक मास की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद वेलकम एवरीवन। गुड मॉर्निंग मैम। सो Happy beginning of the month of Kartik that we are starting today. At least here in the UK, there are different timings, different time zones. Sometimes Kartik is started in the Ekadashi, some different lengths, different ways. Paradox. So yesterday we shared some words about paradox, and today somehow we are, quote unquote, interrupting, quote unquote, interrupting the flow of sharing around evolution and divine love to pay some special attention to the month of Kartik that is beginning today. Hoping it's not an interruption at all, but actually a natural overflow of the same current we are trying to swim in without drowning. It's a deep ocean we are trying to navigate, right? So I'd like to share a few words about Kartik for those of you who are not so familiar with this particular month, and for those of you who think you are familiar with this particular month, we can deconstruct our sense of familiarity, right? And rediscover Kartik anew one more time. And then we will explore in detail a particular song that we will be singing every day. It's part of our Kartik Vrat. Generally, Gaudiya Vaishnav sing this song, Damodar Ashtakam, which we will be sharing in a few moments. We have printed versions for each one of you. So Kartik starts today. It lasts for a month. In our tradition, it's considered, in one sense, the most important month of the yearly, of the Vaishnav calendar. Of course, at the same time, as we always like to say, every day is special, every month is special, every place is special. The divine is omnipresent, so we don't want to over hyper-localize grace in one particular month. No? Like I think I told you a few months ago, I was in Italy and we went to visit Assisi for a second time, this time with some friends. And I asked one of them, we were entering back and forth different churches and places, beautiful places, of course. And I asked him, one of them, like, how is the experience for you? It was his first time in Assisi. And he said, I don't like it much. Interesting. You were not expecting that. But actually, he had a point to make. It was not about Assisi, about St. Francis, but his point was particularly in one direction, which was that we are entering into all these churches that are beautiful and are built in a way that's to create this a sense of the sacred. But the problem with that is when we leave the church, somehow we leave the church thinking now we have left the house of God. No, at least that was his experience. He was struggling with that situation. Okay, now I'm in sacred space, now I'm outside of sacred space. He was sacred space is everywhere. He was not against churches nor Assisi, he was just making a point. And of course, we were talking how, yeah, despite the whole universe is a temple, ultimately, because the divine is inhabiting every pore of being. In the beginning, we may not have that universal vision. So we have to begin somewhere. That's why temples are built. So people think, okay, now I'm entering the temple. An altar is built. No, now the curtain is opening, God is there. Then the curtain closes, so God is no longer here. I'm leaving the temple and outside sacred space. In the beginning, it's a little bit like that. At least it begins somewhere, in one spot, one temple, one altar. But the idea is to gradually expand that sense to every heart, every place, every moment, every month, every week. But as a way of creating some reminder and immersive experience, we have this emphasis not only in our tradition, in every tradition you go to Christianity, they have Eastern or they have this season on that season. Special meditation, a special commitment, a special experience of the sacred, which is again every other day and every other month. But sometimes we need some special focus, presence, and attention. So hopefully, then we can extend that to the rest of the year. And when the batteries are running off, then we have a Kartik again next year or something. So this happens with days like Ekadasi also. It's come twice per month, and it's like an invitation to disrupt normalcy, right? Try to adjust that day and live it in a different way, like you used to live every single day, and change your angle of vision, no? And be reminded of all the things that you want to be reminded during the remaining days before the next Ekadashi. So Kartik month, another way of speaking about the same in a whole month. So again, every day is special, every place is holy because the sweet absolute is inhabiting every atom of existence. But at some stage, we need special days, special places, special moments. to be reminded how every day and every moment is special. So Kartik is a special reminder in that direction, special month associated related to the figure of Sri Radha. It's her month, if you want to call it that way. Kartik is one of the 64 in this connection, right? Rupa Goswami gives 64 angas or aspects of bhakti. One of the 64 are Kartik. No? One is thinking about Krishna, talking about him, associating with devotees, singing, all the things that we may know, studying the Bhagavad. But one of them is celebrating Kartik, and I remember another one is celebrating Janmashtami. And I remember when we were in Switzerland with Krishna Chandra Prabhu for Janmashtami, we were wondering, oh, but you can only do that once a year. No? So that's interesting how the other angas, the other aspects of bhakti are, you can do them every day. Why only this one, only one day a year? We're exploring how actually that one day a year is a reminder of how Krishna is born in your heart, ideally every day of the year. But we need one day to make that point. So similarly, Kartik, okay, it's 1 month. What about the other 11 months? No. Kartik continues to expand its grace and its influence. But sometimes we need a month to make that point, so to say. So Kartik is always happening. Krishna's birth is always happening if we have the heart in the right place. So again, the deity of Kartik, sometimes called Adhishtatri Devata, or the presiding deity of the month, is Sri Radha. Kartik is a name of related to Radha as the daughter of Kirtida. Kirtida is Radha's mother, and Kartika or Kirtik is a derivation of she who is born from Kirtida. So Kartik refers to her. The queen of Vrindavan, the embodiment of love. We have been sharing some words about Sri Radha a few days ago in our Q&A, which ended up being an exploration of Radha Tattva. And as also was mentioned some days ago, sometimes we may hear things like, okay, you need to gain the mercy of Sri Radha, how to say, as the doorway to Krishna, and Radha will introduce you to Krishna. But also, depending what's the inner affinity of the heart, for some, Radha's grace is not the doorway to anything else. But that's the ultimate goal. And many devotees will actually look for Krishna's grace to get Radha's service. So different approaches, depending on the motivation, depending on, so Radha is not necessarily a bridge to something else, but for many, that's the culmination point and the where the whole thing converges, oceanically. So in a month like Kartik, Gaudiya Vaishnava generally, again, considering the specialness of this particular season, generally they do different commitments, different, if you want to use, vows. Hopefully nobody's triggered by any of these words, right? Because none of them are bad words. They try to make special adjustments, and that's something personal, that's something private, that's not something that somebody tells you how to do it, what to do it, or even if you have to do it or not. There's no, nobody like putting a gun on you, like, which are your vows for Kartik? Though maybe some devotees may do that. Right? Who's your guru? How many rounds you are chanting? Which are your Kartik vows? Confess. So relaxing today's evening circle sharing, I won't ask for any public confession of your Kartik vows. But it's always a nice way of trying to make some adjustment and change our angle of vision. And again, whatever vows, if we are inspired to do them, they have to be done in a voluntary way, in a joyful way. They have to be challenging enough as to make us grow, right? Because my bow won't be like, okay, I will drink a half a glass of water less than I used to drink on a daily basis. Okay, but maybe something a little bit more pokey. And sometimes again, devotees may chant more or study more or commit to a certain study or commit to singing a particular set of prayers or singing like Damodar Ashtakam and offering a ghee lamp. Or some devotees do Mauna Vrata for the whole month, silence vow. Again, each one is in their own life dynamic. So for many of us, some of the things are absolutely impossible because you have to do things. And 1 month without talking is a little bit. It necessitates some dynamics. And some other vows can be in terms of restrictions also, right? Some people may. And nowadays I will add a whole chapter on restrictions in the realm of technology and social media that was not there in the scripture hundreds of years ago. So you can tell, okay, in the month of Kartik, as we were talking last night, right? I won't take my cell phone as the very first thing I do in the day. Doesn't sound like the greatest austerity on earth, but for some people, it is. And I won't take my phone on the very last thing I do before closing my eyes and going to rest. We have to begin in a place that is sustainable. So again, it's not like a denial or a repression or something negative, but something that, of course, I try to adjust that so I can invest my time and energy in a positive way in one direction or another. And each one has to be creative about that, introspective about that. What may help me in this particular stage of my journey that I can commit myself to in a sustainable way, in a happy way, in a deep way, and get to explore my potential when I adjust my days in a different way and see what comes from that. So again, I'm not saying anything of this to put on pressure into anyone. Omar is speaking about vows and we are supposed to. No, it's not a calculation, competition, earning, deserving game. It's just an invitation to explore our potential. But sometimes we need to do adjustments a little bit. No? Sometimes we kind of just engage in magical thinking. Like, I want something new to happen, but I'm not willing to do something new for that to happen. Right? That's the definition of Albert Einstein that he gives for madness. You've heard that one? Which means basically to do one thing, always the same thing, but expect a different result. But we do that a lot of the time, right? We daydream about some special experience, but we are not very willing to change our angle of vision, right? So Kartik is all about change our angle of vision, right? We were talking yesterday, daring to adjust our day in terms of some do's and don'ts that are sustainable so we can see reality, see ourselves, we discover everything from a new way. So hopefully we can getting some momentum and inspiration and enthusiasm starting Kartik together here and realizing I'm not alone in this journey. Now, whatever it may be, you know. Recall some days ago, no need to give names, of course, but some will say, okay, I'm not chanting rounds. Okay, maybe you would like to try chanting one round per day. And again, I know that for some it's like one round. I mean, if you do it seriously, deeply, that's a lot there. Remember once talking to a sadhu in Vrindavan, and he told me, it's not easy to chant attentively with full presence, even one maha mantra. Someone say, you mean one round? No, one maha mantra. And everyone was kind of in shock. But in shock because they realized that's true. So again, it's not about us. We always talk. It's not just get the 16-day quota, whatever number, but do whatever you do with presence, you know? So craft sacred space and time to for that to happen. So anyhow, during the month of Kartik, also many famous Leelas happen that we also will celebrate throughout the month in our Vaishnav calendar. Leelas like Rasa Leela, Krishna's Rasa dance, circular dance, Govardhan Leela, the lifting of the heel, and Gopastami, Krishna graduating from being a calf herder to a cow herder. That's big stuff going on there. And different sections that appear in the Bhagavatam, like Venu Gita, Gopi Gita, all that's happening, celebrating during the Kartik month. But it's very special Leela that we celebrate in Kartik is the
Damodar.
I already say that. Damodar Leela. Which is Yashoda binding Krishna with a cord, with a rope made of what? A love. We have love robes in the market here. Right? Yeah. I remember on a personal note, that was the very first thing the very first time I heard about Krishna in this life was Damodar Lila, interestingly. And it was not from a book from any Gaudiya Vaishnava, but it was from a book from Joseph Campbell, the one who wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces. So he had a book on Eastern myths or stories. We had it with a friend of mine that we were friends and played music together, and we were both inquiring about the meaning of life while playing cello and drums and tabla and bansuri. We spent hours inquiring. And once that book came to us, because we will read everything and anything, there was no internet at the time. There was no Google to put how to solve my teenage existential crisis. So we were trying our best with the tools we had at hand. So that book came, and all of us read it, and both of us were equally fascinated with one particular chapter, which was Damodar Lila. All the other chapters were about other stories, other traditions, other forms of the divine. But both were like, we like this Krishna. He's God, but as a baby. Oh, that's cute. And it's as a baby, and he's died. The unlimited is, it was very paradoxical. Speaking about paradox, you want paradox? There you have it. No? The biggest of the biggest, unlimited appearance of baby, right? One who is totally free, being bound by a rope. It's like, it blew our mind. So that was a very powerful seed at that moment, right? So, one sense, if I'm here today, it's because of the Damodar Lila. Very interesting. So that's a very, very dear Lila for me on a personal level. So that's celebrated on the month of Kartik. And of course, by extension, Damodar, as we will see, Damodar means he who is like bind by in his belly. So the Lila where God is bound at his belly. But there is a second Damodar Lila, which is a little bit more related to confidential, indirect, not mentioned openly, which is Radha Damodar Lila. No? What is this? Where Radha and Krishna are bound together in a secret marriage ceremony, as they do in India. They tie the cloths of husband and wife. So that's a type of binding. So there is a secret marriage ceremony performed by the gopis. And Radha and Krishna, they have their clothes tied. So it's another Damodar Lila that is celebrated also in Kartik. So in connection to this, to the month of Kartik, Sri Radha, to the Damodar Lila, by the request of our dear Jamuna, she requested that we kind of explore Damodar Ashtakam, which is an ashtakam, means a Sanskrit composition of 8 verses, in which we will sing it every day, and most Gaudiya Vaishnavas sing it every day. It revolves mostly around the Damodar Lila with Yashoda, and the very last verse will touch upon everything else in a very indirect, confidential, sneaky way. Right, so it's a composition made by Satyabrata Muni. Maybe we can share the paper with the song to each one. We will be going verse by verse today. We won't be singing it per se, but we'll be going verse by verse. But in the evening, we'll be singing it all together. So Kavi sang the.
Yeah, he just quickly ripped it up, and it's so beautiful. We got it printed out nicely.
Okay, thank you, Kavi, for that. Yeah, thank you, Kavi, for that. So each one have that. Maybe, I don't know, at the you keep it for yourself, or yeah.
If for the
Okay.
month party.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Beautiful.
So We'll explore that now, verse by verse. We will go. Actually, to be honest, it's too much to explore the whole song in one lecture. I'll try my best, and we will probably transgress the usual timing. Generally, you require a whole month to do that, and I'm doing it in one single lecture. So I'll be skipping so much, but just touching upon the surface of the song, and of course, also for just a reference, if you're interested. Some years ago, probably 4 years, 5 years ago, also we gave a series of lectures on the Damodar Lila, which I think you may appreciate. It's called Divine Imperfect. It's in the YouTube channel and all that, in case you would like as a further reference during Kartik. It's a lot about the paradox of God being tied, God being afraid, God showing apparent imperfections, and how to allow all that to happen, how can all that can have its own charm and empowering when all this speaks to us in our particular situation. So just a footnote to that. So, okay. So we'll be singing this song almost every evening, a few days because of some other activities. So like the Grief Day exploration, we'll be singing that in the morning. We will be letting you know every day at which time, but we'll try every day to sing Damodar Astakam. And later today in the evening, we will clarify about the offering of the lamp and the meaning of that and some other technical details about it. So we'll go verse by verse. I'll recite it. We can recite it all together, of course, in Sanskrit. Then we can take turns and each one can read it in English, each verse, one by one. But of course, we'll be explaining each verse and then go to the next one. And I will be also referring briefly to a commentary that was written to this Damodar Ashram by Srila Sanatana Goswami, called Dig Darshini Tikar. So, again, each verse deserves its own lecture. We could do a whole retreat on Damodar Ashram. And also, I'll try to connect some of the points since the whole retreat somehow is revolving around evolution and divine love. We will try to make some network connection there. So we can go to verse one. We can recite it in one of the classical melodies that we sing the verse to warm up for the late evening kirtan. Those who know it can join me.
Namamishvaram Lasat kundalam gokule brajamanam.
Beautiful melody. Argentina will used to sing it with charango. Maybe you don't know what's a charango.
No,
You know charango? You brought a charango?
I
Next one.
will.
It's a very interesting combination. And Andean music, I would say Andean from the
Yeah.
Andes.
Thank you.
Oh, so that's it. With the mel this melody and those instruments that make a very beautiful combination. You brought the
No, do
ukulele? Okay. We have piano. Okay. We try with whatever. So, let me start re reading the first translation, and then we can invite whomever wants. First verse, Satyabrata Muni says, "I worship the Supreme Controller, whose form is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Upon his cheeks, Makara-shaped earrings are swinging, and he shines most brilliantly in Gokul, running away from the grinding mortar in great fear of Mother Yashoda. He was ultimately caught from behind." So just in case for those who would like to explore the whole Damodar Lila, the chapter as it appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's in the 10th canto, 9th chapter. And there are a few other chapters giving context to that, but the official chapter is 9th chapter of the 10th canto. It's a very beautiful chapter. Here we are in the Kumar Lila of Krishna on earth. Well, Kumar Lila means the childhood divine play. There are different ages to God, to the one who is beyond age, beyond birth. He takes birth. He has different ages. he undergoes through unfolding in his pastimes on earth. So there's his Kumar Lila, his Pogonda Lila, his Kishore Lila, like early childhood, like infancy, then childhood proper, then teenage foot, and he remains Nitya Kishore, an eternal adolescent. But very mature one, just in case. When we look back at our adolescence, we may think, I don't want to be eternally that. Okay, but Krishna is another form of adolescence, right? So this Damodar Lila revolves around Krishna's Kumar Lila. That's the main, the 10th canto, this is the main Lila around Krishna's infancy, the Damodar Lila. Then the main Lila around Krishna's Pauganda age, childhood, is the Brahma Bimohan Lila, where he's with his friends. Now here's his main relationship is with his parents, right? Then, as us, when we grow, now we don't care so much for our parents. We want to be with our friends all day, playing. And parents call, and it's like, no, I'm busy. And mom is like, welcome to Poganda Lila. And then, when we fall in love with a girl or a boy or whatever, you no longer even care for your friends. Right? What to speak of your parents? No? So to say, no, a way to. I mean, of course, in this case, it's not that Krishna cares now for someone else and disregards everyone else. Again, let's not make full parallel. But there are some corresponding, how to say, prominence in certain relationships corresponding with those ages. So Kumar Lila, Vatsalya Rasa, Krishna and his parents. Poganda Lila, Krishna and his friends, Sakya Rasa. Kishore Lila, adolescent Lila, Krishna and the gopis, Madhurya Rasa. Again, the parents are there, boys are, everyone is there. But this is so we are in a Kumar Lila here. Mostly. Last verse again goes somewhere else. So how this, I will refer him back to the Sanskrit at times, like now. The first verse starts with the word namami. Namami. Which means basically namaskar, namaste, namaha, namami. Namaha. Namah means not me, which is not self-denial. It's just not me in the center of everything. It's like a rejection of self-centeredness and an acknowledgement of the actual center. That's the spirit of Namaha, of offering respects, obeisances, however you may like to call it. It's a denial of self-centeredness and a recognition of the actual center and putting my head at the feet of that center. So it starts with that word, namami. It's like a Mangala Charan. No? Sanatana Goswami said this serves as a Mangala Charan to the whole Damodar Ashram. As we did Mangala Charan before the lecture now, reciting all these verses. Mangala Charan means auspicious invocation of blessings. And I like to say many times that's the most important part of the class. Because it's a moment in which all of us open ourselves to pray and beg for blessings to be instruments of the divine, whether the speaker and the audience, all of us are participating in our own way. So it may last 1 minute, a few minutes, but from that maybe depends how the whole thing unfolds. Yeah. So here, this is an Ashtakam. So an Ashtakam doesn't have a Mangala Charan in the usual way we have one before a class, but the word Namami is the Mangala Charan. The auspicious invocation is Namaskar, namami. I put my head on the ground, offer respect. So this namami puts everything else in context. The whole Damodar Ashtakam exists in the context of namami. That's why Mangala Charan is so important. We begin bowing our head to the center, acknowledging the center with love and respect. And then comes the rest. Namami to whom? Ishvaram Satchidananda Rupam. So it starts with some acknowledgement of who Krishna is. No, it's a little bit more in terms of tattva. Sanatana Goswami say the first line speaks of tattva vishesh. Tattva vishesh. So tattva means, in this case, tattva, the thatness. That's how to translate tattva in Sanskrit. Tat means that. And twice ness, like you say, playfulness, cheerfulness, So tattva means the that-ness. In other words, the ontology of that person. Who is that person ontologically? What's the reality of that person? Krishna, Damodar, little baby tied to a mortar. Yes, but he's Ishwaram Sachidananda Rupam. So he creates that contrast starting. Ishwaram, Supreme Controller. Supreme Controller, but he's tied to a mortar. Yeah, but he's a Supreme Controller. Paradox again. So I offer Namami, I offer my respects to he who is Supreme Controller, Sachidananda Rupan, whose Rupan, whose form is Sachidananda. He's eternal, fully conscious, and full of bliss. No, it's not a form made of bone and flesh, but is condensed consciousness, ecstatic bliss, and eternity personified. So again, that's Aishwarya. It's like, whoa. I thought it was an ordinary boy tied to a mortar. No. Something else is going on here. That's we are not denying that, but that's not the only part of the story. He's at the same time the supreme controller whose form is made of eternity, consciousness, and bliss. So first Aishwarya, and then we can understand Madhurya. Because if it's just Madhurya, if it's just oh Krishna, that boy is a baby and he's tied to a mortar, it's not so charming. And if we on top of that know that baby who is tied to a mortar is the supreme controller and the source of everything. Wow, that's interesting. That what created me without knowing all these terms the first time I read this Damodar Lila, but Joseph Campbell put, okay, Krishna is God. He didn't say Namam Vishvaram Sachidananda Rupam, but basically say, here we have God as a baby, Thai. So that combination of Aishwarya or majesty, grandeur, and Madhurya, intimacy and sweetness was like, And Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a point. The Madhurya Lila of Krishna, by Madhurya here, I don't mean romantic love, but this intimate, sweet Lila of Krishna will be properly appreciated if we bring to our awareness first Aishwarya. Krishna is God, and in the context of him being God, this is going on because of the strength of love. Right? Because if I bring a baby here, that's charming enough. As I always like to say, if I bring a baby, my class is over. Everyone will be like, ooh. Right? And the baby's playing and it's charming. But what if the baby's God? That's another layer of like, wow, that's super charming now. Because you are the source of the universe. Right? But if you take out that idea, he's like the supreme source of everything. Still, there is some charm, but not to the same degree. So when you properly combine these two, Aishwarya and Madhurya there, that's what Krishna says in the basically in the Chatur Shloki of the Srimad-Bhagavad Gita, the first verse. 10th chapter, verse 8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matta bhajante mam buddha bhavasamam. He says, first two lines, I'm the source of everything, everything emanates from me. Aishwarya. And he said, "Iti matva vajante mam Buddha bhavasamamita." Those who know this, they worship me with full intimacy and passion and affection. So first comes the, again, the tattva, the that-ness, and then. Anyhow, you can see how we can go a whole retreat with this with this verse. So, Sanatana Goswami said the first line indicates. Tattva Bishesh. Bishesh in Sanskrit means like the specialty of Tattva. What the specialty of who Krishna is as God. Again, he is Ishvara and Sachidananda Rupa. That makes someone special. If you are welcome, what's your name? I'm the Supreme Controller, and I'm may my whole form is made of eternity, condensed consciousness, and bliss. Can I have your WhatsApp number? I like to be in contact with you. That's Tattva Bishesh. That's line one, referring to the uniqueness of Krishna's identity as God. Let's put it that way. So we begin there. And Namami, we offer pranam to that. So the Namami qualifies the whole thing. Whatever comes after Namami is worthy of Namami. So Satya Brother will say Namami to all this, and then comes the whole Damodar Ashram. Then comes line two. Lasat kundalam gokule brajamanam. So lasat kundalam means he who has, as we have in the translation here, upon his cheeks, makara-shaped earrings are swinging. Makara is kind of a particular creature that we don't find on Earth. Well, sometimes it's translated as a dragon. Sometimes it's like something close to a shark. It's a paradoxical creature. It's not a shark, literally. So anyhow, Krishna has some earrings with that form. As I always like to say, do not develop a superiority complex because you know which type of earrings God is using.
Oh,
But we all know that no other religion knows that even God has earrings. No, we know the type of earrings he uses. We know everything. No, be careful. Don't become elitist. So anyhow, but Lasat Kundalam, he has those earrings, and those earrings are like swinging, no? And touching his cheeks, like kissing. The earrings are kissing Krishna's cheeks, no? Especially now. Remember, the scene as we all see is Krishna is running from Yashoda. No? So he's moving, and if you have earrings, the earrings will move. At least these earrings, no? Because they have the makara floating on them, so they are kissing his cheeks. No? These are ornaments that he wears. And this is interesting because here, most of us in this world, so to say, if we use earrings or any other ornamentation, is trained to beautify ourselves. But the Srimad-Bhagavatam says something very interesting, which is it's Brahma saying that how it says, Parampadam Bhushana Bhushanangam. Bhushana Bhushanangam. He says, oh, Krishna, you are the ornament of your ornaments. You are so beautiful that actually your ornaments become more beautiful in contact with you and not the other way around. Right? You have all these ornaments, earrings and anklets and this, but it's not that them make you more beautiful. They become more beautiful by proximity to you, beauty personified, the all attractive. And as we know, Krishna is so beautiful that he himself, in a non-narcissistic way, he becomes attracted to himself. No? Because again, if I see any of you looking at yourself at the mirror and like, ah, oh, probably will think, oh, that guy has a problem. But Krishna is seeing himself reflected in a crystal pillar, and he becomes mesmerized by that. He's like, wow, what's that? Who is that beautiful boy there? He doesn't realize it's himself. He becomes captured by his own beauty. That's what it means to be the all attractive. And his beauty is always increasing. We have to refer back here. Ever evolving. His beauty is ever fresh, ever new. It's not that Krishna is the all attractive, means he's so attractive that he cannot get more attractive. That doesn't sound the all attractive. All attractive means someone who gets all the more attractive at every passing moment, which is impossible to think for us. Because for most of us, the more time passes, something else is going on. Those who are about 40, 50 know what we are talking about. So to say, of course, the inner beauty can always increase. And if that happens, even the decay of the body has its own beauty, let's be honest.
Nicely said.
Sorry?
Nicely said.
But we have this famous verse we were reading the other day, right? Krishna's beauty is increasing at every moment. The gopis' love is increasing at every moment to correspond with that beauty. And that makes Krishna more beautiful. And the two engage in a competition with neither of both accept defeat. So the whole thing is ongoing, increasing in an ongoing way. So anyhow, all this to say, these earrings he has kissing, the earrings are kissing his cheek because his cheek is becoming more beautiful at every moment. It's more becoming more worthy of being kissed. So the earrings become more and more like, everything is alive in the spiritual world, right? The earrings are not just inert stuff, but it's made of living consciousness. So everything is personal. It's an entity, you know? And they are kissing Krishna at every moment with every his ever fresh, newly blossom cheeks. He's the ornament of his ornaments. Brajamanam. So the part two, line two, sorry. Line two is describing a little bit. Sanatana Goswami will say Rupa Vishesh, first we say Tattva Vishesh, the specialty of who Krishna is as God. Now comes Rupa Vishesh, the specialty of his form. Again, his form is so beautiful, his earrings are addicted to kissing his cheeks in an ever-evolving way. And then the second part of the line two, Gokule Brajamanam, and the third line, Sanatana Goswami will say, is Parivar Vishesh. Vishesh means the specialty or the specialness of Parivar, Parikar, sorry, Parikar. What Parivar? Parivar means family, Parikar means associates. So the specialty of his associate, Gokule Brajamanam. No? Gokule Brajamanam means he shines more beautifully in Gokul, which Gokul includes the Brajavasis. Gokul is a name for Vrindavan on earth, right? Generally, the transcendental Vrindavan is known as Golok. The earthly Vrindavan is known as Gokul. So Gokule Brajamanam, he shines most brilliantly in Gokul. There are many statements in the scriptures. Again, I have to continue to verse two, but which describe how even the pastimes of Krishna on earth have a very special features that are not included in the Vrindavan in transcendence. They're more earthly in one sense. The tamal tree in Golok Vrindavan is a little bit more aishwaric and big, and on earth is a little smaller and earthly. Still, both are human lila, but here is even more human. As certain things happen in the lila on earth that do not happen in Golok Vrindavan. Krishna is born. Krishna is never born in Golok Vrindavan. He's always there. And in the lila on earth, he's born at one point. And then again, the third line is saying, Yashoda Biyolu Kalat Dhavamanam. So he speak here, Yashoda appears into the stage, so to say. So Parikar Vishesh, the specialty of Krishna's associates, Yashoda, Nitya Siddha, Krishna's eternal mother, and her love, and how Krishna is running away from her. Paramrishtam Atyanto Drutya Gopya. So this verse is a summary of the whole thing, of course, right? It's a very encapsulated form of what we'll be now describing in more detail. And it's very interesting because it starts saying the supreme controller made of consciousness, bliss, and ecstasy, wears earrings. No? So it starts to add elements of intimacy and sweetness. And those earrings are kissing him, and he's very beautiful. And he has a place called Gokul. It's a village. He lives in the village. The supreme controller is also all in a village. So it starts to weave into together Aishwarya and Madhurya. He's shining more splendidly there through love, in love. And not only that, he has a mother. Really? Oh, we thought God was the source of everyone, the mother and father of everything. Yes, also. Paradox. God is his mother and father. Krishna says that in the Gita. I'm the mother, I'm the father. But also I have my mother as well. So Yashoda appears into the scene. And here it's described how Krishna is running away fearing from Yashoda. From her running after him, fear of chastisement, fear of being bound. And ultimately he was caught from behind. Again, so this is a summary of the whole Lila, concluding this shocking notion of God is captured. No? Many times you hear from the Upanishads that we are running after Krishna, but you can never catch up. No, I'm saying, yeah. Catch him or catch up with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Catch up with
Yeah.
him. Our
No? The Upanishads are running after him, and the Yashoda has him tied. So that speaks about like, oh, okay. We better pay attention to this Yashoda because the whole array of scriptures and mystics are trying to get a glimpse of that reality, and she has him on her also lap, tied him, totally captured, totally captured, totally tied. So Sanatana Goswami said these last two lines of verse one are Lila Vishesh, the uniqueness of the Lila, of the divine play, which makes Krishna. Again, and this is a hierarchy based on rasa, as I spoke recently in a series of articles I wrote about personal and impersonal. We accept all that as part of reality. There is an impersonal dimension of God, there is a personal one, and there is a hierarchy in terms of rasa. No? Our tradition is a rasa tradition. Rasa means the sacred taste of divine mellows, difficult to translate in any other language. And in terms of rasa, Bhagavan is not only superior to Brahman, but Krishna is superior to other forms of Bhagavan. There's lots of hierarchy in our tradition. In terms of rasa, in terms of tasting a particular flavor, in terms of tattva, of thatness, Brahman, Bhagavan, Paramatma are the same non-dual reality. So we shouldn't be sectarian. Again, I develop another form of superiority complex. Those impersonalists, we are personalists, we are better than the Brahman is another, is the non-dual absolute. Brahman and Bhagavan are non-different, a bit. They are different in terms of the possibility they offer, but you can go to Brahman and stay there forever. So it cannot be that bad. That's available for eternity. It's not our cup of tea, but it's someone else's cup of tea. And that cup of tea will exist for eternity. So, but again, going to Bhagavan, to God as a personal entity, there are different forms of God. And in terms of rasa, Krishna is above Narayan, for example. Rupa Goswami makes this hierarchy. Narayan has, from Krishna's 64 qualities that he mentions, 60 Narayan has. There are four that not even Narayan has. With all love and respect for Narayan, because he's Krishna. We are talking about the same person. Don't forget. And all of them have to do with Madhurya. Lila Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Benu Madhurya, all the sweetness and intimacy that only Krishna shows, all in Vrindavan. Not only there is a hierarchy between Krishna and Narayan, but there's a hierarchy between Krishna in Vrindavan and Krishna outside of Vrindavan. Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna in Mathura, that's one thing. Krishna in Vrindavan, that's another thing. You won't find Krishna as a baby tied to a mortar in Dwarka. Nor in Mathura. That only happens in Vrindavan, right? So again, this is what makes Krishna Lila in Vrindavan special. And again, this whole song is about Krishna Lila in Gokul in Vrindavan. Okay, enough for verse one. Never enough, but we have to move on. Verse two. Yeah, we can recite it all together, same melody.
Rudham tanmohor netra yugman mrijantam Karambojayugmena satankanetram Mohosvasakankatrinetantakanta Stitagraivam
Would like to read verse number two. Full volume, so in my recording it stays recorded. Yes.
Weeping incessantly, he rubs his eyes with his two lotus hands. His eyes are filled with fear. He takes heavy breaths again and again that cause the pearls and other ornaments around his neck, which is marked by three gracefully curving lines, to tremble. I offer pranam unto the Damodar who is bound by his mother's Vatsalya Bhakti.
Thank you. So again, now starts the more detailed depiction of what's taking place in this general scene that was described in verse one, right? Krishna running, being caught, but now comes to the dynamics. Krishna weeping, Krishna feeling this, Krishna feeling that. So the verse starts describing Krishna weeping incessantly. And that's again very interesting idea. God weeps. No, it's very much very different from this notion of God as impassible, as also referred in my book, God not feeling anything, God being so aloof and beyond everything that He doesn't feel anything in any way. He doesn't feel anything for us over here. He doesn't feel anything for anyone over there. They're here. But we realize, no. Here we have a divine that feels it all. Here Krishna is described weeping incessantly, rubbing his eyes with his two lotus hands. Not like when we are weeping and you are like a child, especially. No? His eyes are filled with fear. Interesting, right? Yesterday we were talking about how all these emotions that we think, oh, they are bad, we should stop having fear. And there's a place to say that, but then you come full circle and realize, oh, there was fear. There are this fear over there. And there's anger over there. And there are all this stuff, but all existing in the bigger embrace of love. So in love, everything finds its ultimate final place of expression. You can be fearful in the context of Krishna's fearful. Krishna's not faking. This is an important point here that Kunti Devi makes in the Bhagavatam, in her famous prayers, which is she's talking, praying to Krishna, and recalling as a family member of Krishna, when Krishna will express crying fearfulness of Yashoda here, she says, "You are not faking that. No, it's not an owl. Actually, I'm God. I'm not afraid of anything. But okay, it seems I have to cry now. My mom is chasing me, and I'm supposed to run away and supposed to be fearful and supposed to cry. Okay, let's pretend." That's not Leela. That's not Krishna Leela. Krishna Leela doesn't mean Krishna is acting, but he knows it's a show, it's a performance. He's full into that. He's absolutely identified with each one of those emotions. That's who he is. Right. As I always like to say, God is an aspect of Krishna. Krishna is not an aspect of God. The other way around, at least from our rasa perspective. God is a function of Krishna as cosmic administrator somewhere outside of Vrindavan. Let's put it that way. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is God at home, so much at home that he forgets that he's God. That remains an upadhi, like a secondary designation over there in the office. Okay, when I go to the office, I enter into my office, I put my suit, my shoes, bureaucracy, formality. The boss came, everyone is great. Hello, yeah. And when I go to my house, I'm barefoot. No, I do whatever. I'm another person in one sense. I'm the same person, but not the same person. As I give the example, my grandchild is waiting. No? King Charles leaves the palace and goes to his innermost quarters, just to give a local example. And the grandchild is waiting, and the grandchild jumps on the head of the king. If anyone else will do that, the head will be cut. But the grandchild is jumping on that, and the king and the child said, "Now I want you to be a what?
A horse.
A donkey, a horse, walking four legs." Imagine if you say that to the king. And the king starts to walk in four legs. Oh, a powerful person in the world who could press a button and send an atomic bomb or start a war. Now he's walking on four legs, conquered by the strength of love, like a donkey. That's the power of love, right? That's the power of love. So now apply that, multiply that, and apply that to the divine, basically the same, but amplified. So anyhow, a point to make that all the things that Krishna is experiencing here are real. No? They're not faking. Remember the essence of rasa. The scriptures say rasa sar chamatkar. The essence of rasa or aesthetic delight, sacred rapture, is chamatkar, means astonishment, wonder, surprise. So Krishna is living every moment in this lila as if it's real and new and full of wonder and astonishment. Again, he's not faking it. He will be faking the whole thing. There will be no actual chamatkar. And also I refer to that in my book in terms of omniscience. That's a whole conversation. And maybe this is a point that It may shock you, but I try to make the case on some level here, more in the next book, that God's omniscience is nuanced. It's not that Krishna knows everything, past, present, future. He knows everything past, present. In terms of future, he knows all the possible outcomes, but he doesn't know what will actually happen, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many, and based on, because if he will know everything, there's no place for chamatkar. And that's the essence of rasa. And Taittiriya Upanishad say rasa by saha. The absolute is rasa. So the absolute is rasa, and the essence of rasa is astonishment. The absolute essence is astonishment. But if there is no astonishment, there's no God. Because his essence is that. Follow my point? So if God will know everything, what will happen in every detail, he will say, Krishna will say, okay, in an hour Yashoda will want to chastise me and will run after me, so I have to, I know what will happen. But anyhow, I'll fake it. Fake it till you make it. No, that's not what's going on. That's why Kunti is saying, you are not faking any of those emotions. Again, remember, here we have Krishna as a baby. Baby is something very, as I say before, baby enters the room, everyone becomes mesmerized. Swami Padmanabha's class is over. Everyone's attention goes there. And why we are so attracted to a baby? Many cases because the baby is so vulnerable, so fragile, and he's not faking it. He's not entering the room like trying to look stronger. That's what we learned a few years after education. But the baby is just like sheer transparency in that way, in the messiness, in the whatever. Very fragile, very vulnerable, very naked, showing that. So that's attractive, because we are all supposed to be like that. Sometimes we are reminded of that when we see that unconsciously, intuitively, we are attracted to that because that's a sacred reminder of you are also vulnerable, you are also fragile, and you are supposed not to hide that. Try to be that gives so much freedom to be yourself in embracing all your vulnerability. So here we have Krishna giving that example as a baby crying, running away, being afraid. And as I said, given that he's God, not only he's a baby, he's a baby God. So that's especially charming. Appearing helpless. And again, doing things that appear to be imperfect. Because the whole Leela, as you know, this Leela, Damodar Leela, the background of that is that Krishna was taking butter, eating butter from different places, and then taking some pots and feeding the monkeys. And Yashoda realizes, my gosh, there's mischief at home. She starts to run after him. So he's stealing butter. No, he's doing mischief. God is not supposed to do that. Right? He's lying. Because many times another Leela related to this section is the famous one that Krishna is accused by his friends of eating earth. Right? And Yashoda calls Krishna, say, open your mouth. Your friends are saying you ate the earth. You ate earth. See, they're envious of me because I always defeat them in wrestling. So they want to bully me now, see me humiliated. That's why they're doing this. They're jealous. They are conspiring. No, that's not true. I haven't eaten their earth. Open your mouth. Let's see. There was a lot of earth there. Yashoda saw the universal form. She saw the whole creation inside Krishna, and inside that universal creation inside Krishna, she saw Krishna inside the planet Earth that was inside Krishna. So she has this panentheistic epiphany. Panentheistic means God is in everything, everything is in God. So she said that. She said, okay, Krishna is here in the world, but now I'm seeing the world in Krishna. And Krishna inside that world, and that world inside that Krishna. It was like she was tripping. It was like, what's going on? No. And again, Krishna, in one sense, we could say Krishna lied. He actually ate earth, but I want to say you could say he didn't eat earth because the whole earth is inside of him.
Yes.
So he's a liar, but he's not a liar, right? He's a thief, he's stealing, but at the same time he's the owner of everything. So how come much you steal something if everything belongs to you? This is again the paradox of the Leela, no? On the surface, he's a liar, he's a thief. And at this point of the Leela, he has not become officially a womanizer yet. And Yashoda is not aware of Krishna's playboy nature. That's another layer of things that, wow, that's a whole bunch of imperfections. That's your God. Womanizer, thief, liar. That's absolutely immoral. But again, if you pay close attention, you realize all that is not immoral. It's not merely moral, it's transmoral. You need to understand it another way. Of course, Krishna is at first with the gopis and so on. It's not mundane harm or love. No, I told this a few times, this story of, and just in case, we'll go a little bit beyond the normal time today. So just in case.
Amanda's there.
Yeah,
Right.
anyhow. And once a nun, I was told, in Europe, they took the devotees to court, denouncing that they are worshipping an immoral god, which has all these affairs with married ladies. And the nun was there in the court bringing all the evidence, quoting the Bhagavatam in court, but not in favor of our tradition. So hours and hours she was bringing evidence to show these guys are absolutely crazy, worshipping an immoral womanizer, thief and liar. And then was the turn for the devotee, the Gaudiya Vaishnava, to defend his case, the tradition. He said, "I only have one question to ask to the sister, and that's it." And okay, you ask your question. He says, "Okay, she was a nun. So you have a ring in your finger. What's the meaning of that ring?" So she didn't reply first, and the judge said, "Please, you have to reply to the question. This ring means that I'm married to Jesus." And they would say, "Okay, that's it." In other words, if every nun is married to Jesus, he's as a womanizer as Krishna is. But you will never take married to Jesus in that way, right? So the same applies to Krishna and not only his marriages, but his paramour love, which is another degree of complexity, but still is the same principle. Anyhow, so Krishna hides himself behind a tunnel of imperfections, let's put it that way, right? Appears to be imperfect, but that's an invitation for us to look for the essence of love. And do I stay in the apparent imperfection and say, "Oh no, this is imperfect, I'm leaving it"? So by his so-called imperfection, Krishna is inviting us to offer him unconditional love. "I love you despite you're a womanizer, despite you're a liar and a thief." Again, we know he's all those things in a certain way, but everyone in Vrindavan loves him, and they know he's a womanizer, he's a thief, he's a liar, but well, we love him unconditionally. So sometimes our ideas of God are very conditional. He has to be only like this, 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 this. Only then I love God. He has to provide me this. He has to be in this way. Only then I surrender. Only then I trust. Only then I love. It's very conditional. So Damodar Lila is a huge invitation to love beyond appearances, to love beyond form, to love unconditionally. Anyhow, this is a second verse describing in detail Krishna's taking heavy breaths again and again. The pearls and his ornaments around his neck are trembling. Again, it's a very deeply visual depiction of all these emotions. And then it concludes saying, "I offer pranam to Damodar, who is bound by his mother Vatsalya Bhakti." So I would know Krishna is tied eventually. Yashoda is running after him and eventually catching with him. And she tries to bind Krishna. That's a whole another conversation. She brings rope. The rope is always 2 fingers too short. Brings more rope, adds more rope, still 2 fingers too short. Paradoxical again, more rope. And eventually, when Krishna sees her mother endeavoring with such love to tie him, which of course from a contemporary Western mentality sounds utterly dysfunctional, right? The mom tied the child to a tree or something. Like, wow, she needs to be put in jail or something. But try to understand the spirit, the culture, the times. And the intention was, okay, I'm hearing that my child is stealing things and lying. I don't want him to be spoiled as a grown up. I want him to be a good boy. So I'll do this. Yeah. Which of course all this ultimately means, as the verse says, Christians have been tied by the rope of affection, of Vatsalya Bhakti. Vatsalya means, in this case, maternal love, parental love, maternal love. Verse number three. I have to repress myself and move to the next one. Iti drikswalila bhirananda kunde swagosham nimajantam akyapayantam tadiyeshitagyesu Jamuna, read in English, please.
Through pastimes such as these, he drowns the residents of Gokul in pools of bliss, thereby informing people who are aware of his godhood that he can only be conquered by his devotees. Hundreds of times, I again offer loving obeisances to him.
So there's a lot in this verse, in every verse. I love to go through these songs and verses because, again, many times we just sing the songs and do not stop to explore. No? I remember some years ago, maybe like, yeah, lots of years, 10 years ago, 15 years. I remember we did a whole, I was in Argentina, we the whole year, our lectures were studying each one of the songs from the song Vaishnav songbook. We'll sing the song, and the whole class was exploration of that song. So we'll go through all through like, yeah, 365 songs or something. And it was very beautiful because, again, you stop to explore the song, which helps then when you sing the song, it makes much more sense in so many ways. So it's a very healthy, beautiful, sacred exercise, a form of lecture divina, if you will. So iti driksha lila vir ananda kunde. So by lila such as this, Satyabrata Muni is saying, such as the Damodar lila, ananda kunde. No? You are created an ananda kunda. You are created a pool, lake of ananda, of bliss. And you're immersing all the, it's a poetic way of saying, you are throwing all of your companions in Vrindavan to a pool of bliss. Right? So again, he's crying, he's tired, he's afraid. But it's increasing everyone's bliss. So that doesn't mean that everyone is happy because Krishna is crying. It's just that all that is happening is increasing love. So in that sense, we mean bliss. Whatever is happening, whatever interaction between Krishna and Yashoda, even if externally the mother is dying, the child is crying, it's like, wow, that's so abusive and dysfunctional. No, love is increasing. That's the only actual thing that is going on. But it doesn't look like that. Yeah, that's how love operates. It goes beyond what seems to be the, it goes beyond the external form of it. Especially in Vrindavan. Again, it's very bewildering. Like this nun thought, oh, this Krishna with these ladies, that's totally bad. No, that's the higher thing. But you need to explore it properly. The same. A mother tying a kid to a mortar and him crying. Let him go. No, their love is increasing for one another. No. Yeah. Look beyond the surface. So here, this is the point, right? By pastimes like this, he's, even the translation says, he's drowning the residents of Gokul in a pool of bliss. Drowning, like we were talking the other day, passing in the tavern, right? Drinking and passing and returning another shot. Passing in the tavern of divine life. So here they are drowning, but they do not die. They just drown and they reemerge again, and they drown again, and they reemerge again. And they are all drunk in divine love, in Ananda. And it's interesting because then it says, respond, no? Like, by this type of pastime, by this type of drunkenness, by this type of drownness. Krishna is informing those who are aware of his godhood that he can only be conquered by his devotees. In other words, the point here is basically those who only know Krishna as God and are not familiar with the intimacy of the lilas of places like Vrindavan, Krishna is showing to those people how much more I'm captured by this type of love. No? Bhakta Vatsalya, there's the name of Krishna. No? He was very affectionate to his devotee. Again, he's affectionate to everyone. He loves everyone unconditionally, but he also reciprocates accordingly. So if someone loves him madly, he will love them madly. If you don't love him madly, he won't interrupt your unwillingness to interact madly. But for those who love him madly, he's more than happy to reciprocate. Right? So he's conquered basically by the love of his devotees. That's what this verse said. He can only be conquered by his devotees, which means he can only be conquered by love. He's so happy to be conquered, to be tied. Again, the tying is being captured, being conquered, and that's the main quality of Krishna. If you are interviewing Krishna, ask him, what's the favorite attribute about, what's the favorite thing about yourself? That I'm totally conquered by the love of my devotees. That's my favorite aspect about me, which is not about him, it's about the love and how that love affects him. So it's perfectly humble. That's the favorite thing about Krishna, for Krishna. I'm captured by the love of my devotees. Before this Damodar Lila is described, how Krishna as a child will be learning to crawl and then learning to walk, and the elder gopis will tell to Krishna, okay, dance. No? And if you dance, we will give you a sweet. No? So Krishna starts like to dance again, and he's a few years. So imagine like a little child, like, okay, dance, and the gopis are like moving the sweet like this, and Krishna starts to move, following the sweet. So the whole idea is he's being a puppet in the hands of love, basically. The gopis they are embodiments of love. Again, this is not manipulation, psychological abuse. We are talking about whole world made of love. So he's just like dancing to the tune and to the pace of love. And again, this point is made on terms of those who are aware of his godhood, implying indirectly the Vrajavasis are not aware of Krishna's godhood. They love him for who he is. They don't love Krishna because Krishna is God. Because Krishna is not God for them. Narayan is God. If you go to Vrindavan and say Krishna is God, they will kick you out immediately. Aparad. How you dare to say that? Right? Famous instance. Again, Braja, this is called in Sanskrit technically Gyanasunya Bhakti, which is a trademark of Vrindavan. Everyone in Vrindavan is Gyanasunya Bhakta. Gyanasunya. Gyan means knowledge. Sunya means empty, devoid of, and bhakti. A bhakti which is devoid of knowledge, which means Srila Sridhar Maharaj will call that brain dead bhakti. So the Brajavasis are not operating through brain, they're operating through heart. Brain dead, heart filled bhakti. So they have no knowledge in the sense that they have no knowledge even that Krishna is God. That type of knowledge they don't have. But they love Krishna like nobody else. And love is the king of knowledge. So in another way, they are full of knowledge. If we take knowledge to be love. But they do not see Krishna as God. Again, God is Narayan and they worship Narayan on a daily basis. But while they are worshiping Narayan, they are thinking about Krishna. In the same way we may be doing puja to Krishna, to Mahaprabhu, to Gaur Nithai, externally, but our mind is on the cooking, laundry list, or whatever. In Vrindavan, it's something similar but different. They're worshiping Narayan, but they are thinking about Krishna. And if they pray to Narayan, it's only in relationship to Krishna. Narayan, please protect Krishna. Narayan, please bless Krishna. Narayan. It's all going there. So that's the purpose of God in Vrindavan. May you bless Krishna, may you protect Krishna, may Krishna be. That's a unique psychology there. And no matter how much Krishna does things that are quite godly, in the psychology of the Brajavasis, that only increases their intimacy and affection for Krishna. Well, a famous example I always give is Govardhan Lila, which will be celebrated in a few weeks. So Krishna's a 5-year-old boy lifting a hill, 7-year-old, not much difference. Lifting a hill, it's a big hill. It takes 6 hours to walk around it if you have fast pace. So imagine the size of it. So he's lifting the whole hill with his what pinky? Pinky finger of the left hand, the less powerful hand, for 1 week. Imagine. Some of you had a child at 7 years. Imagine if your 7-year-old child is lifting the whole Glastonbury, so to say, or something. You start to doubt. You have to have an existential crisis as a mother. No? Is this my son, my daughter? Who are you? What's going on? Are you God? Right? So Krishna's doing that in front of all Vrindavan. That's pretty Aishwaric, right? Much majesty, power. But the most interesting thing is not that he's doing that, but that all of the Brajavasis do not believe that he's God, even when he's showing that in your face that he's doing that. But their affection is increased again. Yashoda sees Krishna doing that, and she feels, oh, he must be so hungry after so many days lifting the hill. So she starts to find, look for food and starts to feed him. That's the only concern for her. Or Krishna's friends think, oh, Krishna, you're lifting the hill. You must be tired by this point. So you can pass the hill to Sridham, another of Krishna's friends, because he's stronger than you after all. Daily, on a daily basis, when you do wrestling, he always defeats you. So pass the hill on to him and relax for a moment. That's what they think. And Krishna, no, I'm okay. Okay. Then we will do some massage. And they start to massage Krishna's arm. Again, the idea he may be God is not crossing the system, because they have too much love for him as his friend, as his child. All the gopis in their romantic love will say, oh, Krishna is a cheater. We know him. He seems that he's lifting Govardhan, but love of Govardhan is floating in ecstasy by the offerings that Nanda Maharaj gives him. And Krishna is such a cheater. He saw Govardhan lifting. He came down quickly and put the finger like he's lifting it. We know you. And their Madhurya Rasa is increasing. So again, the particular love they have is never interrupted. It can only increase. No matter what you put. If Krishna behaves like God, their intimate love increases. If Krishna does not behave like God, their intimate love increases. You put whatever you want in between. Their love is of such nature. So that's why this verse is saying, no? Those who are only aware of his godhood, okay, there is a lesson here in Vrindavan to learn. There is something more to say. I'd like to finish with one verse. I'd like to finish the explanation of this verse with another verse from the Bhagavatam, which is a very interesting verse. It's 10:8:45, which comes basically before the Damodar Lila. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, this is the Parivasa Sutra of the whole Krishna Lila. Parivasa Sutra means one statement around which something else revolves. So the whole Krishna Lila, or Braja Lila in particular, the nature of Vrindavan, like I just explained, the psychology of the Brajavasis, how they see Krishna, that's encapsulated in this verse. 10th canto, verse 8, chapter 8, verse 45. Traya Chopanishabdischa Sankhya Yogaschatutai Upagiyamana Mahatmyan Harim Samanyatatmajam. Which is simple, but it makes a statement, it's connected to this. The verse says, okay, Traya Chopanishabdischa, the glories of Krishna are sung throughout all the Upanishads and all the scriptures as God, as the divine this and the divine that. Upagiyamana Mahatmyam, his Mahatmya, his glory are Upagiyamana, like broadly sung and spread throughout all the sacred scriptures. And the last line puts the Harim Samanyatatmajam. Yet, in the context of Yashoda, she considered such a person his child, her child. So that's a very important. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said the whole Brajalila revolves around this verse. Aishwarya Madhurya. All the scripture glorify Krishna as the divine God. Yashoda sees him as her little child. And that kind of her psychology somehow embodies the whole of Vrindavan psychology. Krishna is not God. I mean, he is, but she will have a good, she will, I mean, if you go to Yashoda with what the Upanishad says about Krishna, say, yeah, but the Upanishads are running after him. I have him on my lap. So, one we should take more seriously. No? The Upanishadic statements of the Vrajavasa statements. Right? Verse number four. Bharam diva moksham vadin ba nachanyam brine Sada me manasya virastam ki manyai. Would like to read verse 4, translation in English.
O Deva, I do not ask for liberation from this world, nor the highest liberation of residence in Vaikuntha, nor do I seek any other benediction from you, the Supreme Bodhisattva. O Nata, may this form of yours as Bala Gopal, a little cowherd boy in Vrindavan, forever remain visible in my heart. What is the use of any other benediction?
Beautiful. So that's basically an end, represent the spirit of Vrindavan or someone who aspires to enter that realm. Like this verse is similar to verse 4 of Sikshastakam. Nadanamna janamna sundarim kavitam ba jagadishagama ye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatam bhaktirayat. Mahaprabhu was saying, I don't care for wealth, for fame, for followers, for money, for liberation, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. I'm okay coming over and over again to this world as long as I can offer to you ahaituki bhakti, love for the sake of love. Send me wherever you want. I'm okay. That's a willingness, not the price to pay. And the Vrajavasis have that same mood. So there's no desire even for liberation. And there are different types of liberation, right? Some say, okay, yeah, we don't want impersonal liberation. There's also personal liberation. Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, Sharsti, going to Vaikuntha, having a body like Narayan, residing in the same planet of God, having the opulence of the divine. I don't want any of that. So, why? Because I want just bhakti. I'm doing bhakti and I want to continue doing bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti, bhakti goes to bhakti. Bhakti out of bhakti, bhakti for the sake of bhakti. That's the non-duality of bhakti. The other day I was seeing a video from Shyam Das, famous kirtaniya from the Vallabh Sampradaya. He will say, you cannot get more non-dual than that. Non-dual means we are doing something, and that's something we want to continue doing forever. That's the non-duality of bhakti. The means and the goal are the same. No, it's not that we are doing something to obtain something else as a result. I'm not doing bhakti to obtain dharma, artha, kama, moksha, or whatever. I'm doing bhakti to obtain bhakti. And I already have bhakti. So bhakti for the sake of more bhakti. And bhakti is never something for me. Bhakti is always something that is offered in love. It's never selfish. Here, Krishna is addressed with the name Deva. Right? Varam Deva Moksham, not Deva. Deva is interesting. It's a Sanskrit word from which the word divine in English derives. Divine, the divine, Deva. And Deva comes from the root Sanskrit root div, which means to play. Interestingly. So divine means God. Deva is a word for God. It means he who plays. It's interesting because generally we don't think, again, our idea of God is more at the office, as I say before. All formal, boring, angry, aloof, at the office, too busy administrating stuff. No, only playing. That's the only idea of God that makes him Deva. Now, Krishna, Arjuna calls Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita Deva Deva. If Deva is not enough, he who plays and plays and plays. No, that's why whatever actions God performs are called Leela, which means play, because he's Deva, he who plays. So whatever he does is play, lila, adventure. We're set for an adventure, eternal play. So again, these are the types of prayer that absolutely capture God's heart, because in this type of prayer, again, here Satyabrata Muni is saying, I'm not approaching you for liberation. I'm not approaching you to get out of this world. I'm not approaching you to get into Vaikuntha. I'm not seeing any other benediction from you. Again, money, fame, knowledge, position, power. Basically, I'm not approaching you with a long list of requests that most of the people are approaching you. And Krishna is like, so why are you approaching me? Because of you. I want you. Krishna's like shocked. What? Most of the people do not care for me. Most people care for what I can facilitate to them. You want me. That captures God's attention. As I say here, he said, like, may this form of yours as Bala Gopal, like the young Bala, like the kid, cowherd boy, in Vrindavan forever remain visible in my heart. Basically, that's the only thing I want, to not lose sight of who you are and to, of course, honor that. Sadamimmanasya. What other benediction there actually is apart from that? All the other things are so-called benedictions. Again, most people ask for things, for knowledge, for power, ultimately for liberation. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. That's why the Bhagavatam begins saying Dharma Prayuto Kaitavotra. In this book, the Bhagavatam, we find Damodar Lila, the culmination of the Bhagavatam, Krishna Lila. In this book, we reject all that. All that is considered Kaita Dharma, Bhagavatam says. Cheating religion. Approaching God for things, for power, for mercy, for even relief. Okay, there's a place for that on some level. But when you put the mood, the love of Vrindavan on the other side of the scale, everything else is reduced to cheating religion. And maybe we still engage in cheating religion. Of course, let's be honest. Many times we still say, Krishna, Krishna, help me, relieve me. I want this, I want that. Give me that, give me this. Give me a wife, a husband, a car, a position, a PhD, fame, whatever. Maybe a popular kirtaniya, whatever, you name it. It's all about me. And Krishna is providing, no? But when at one point it's like, I'm interested in you, that touches other fiber. And when you get that, everything else is seen as cheating, as a form of self-deception. Because at the end of the day, it's not feeding the soul's ultimate real interest. Even if we think, no, that's my real interest. I want this. Yeah, I know you want that. But that's not the real interest of all that you can be, who you are and all that you can be. So how Krishna responds to such prayer? Oh, imagine. I'd like to share with you a few verses from the Bhagavatam from the ninth canto. This requires a separate retreat to analyze these verses, which we have done in the past in other places. We can do it at some point. These are beautiful verses, six verses. I will just read them. I won't say anything. I will try. But these are very famous verses, chapter 9, canto 9, chapter 4, verses 63 to 68, which is basically a love, like this book I was reading, Love Letters from God. This is like Krishna expressing his love for his devotees. For someone who approaches him from that place. The Krishna says, try to pay attention if you want, close your eyes, whatever. Krishna is saying, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because they are free from all material desire, I dwell only in the core of their hearts. Not only my devotee, but even the devotee of my devotee is most dear to me. Without such saintly souls who seek nothing but me, I have no desire to enjoy my own bliss, not even my supreme opulences. What joy is there for me apart from them? My devotees abandon home, wealth, even their very lives only to serve me, expecting nothing in return. How then could I ever abandon them? Just as a chaste woman brings her gentle husband under her control through devoted service, so do my devotees, equal to all and fully attached to me in the core of their hearts, bring me entirely under their sway. They do not seek even the four types of liberation, though such rewards come of their own accord. What to speak then of perishable pleasures like heavenly enjoyment? The last verse says, my pure devotees reside within the core of my heart, and I within theirs. They know no one but me, and I know no one but them. So that's how Krishna responds to someone who prays, like we are seeing here in verse 4 of Damodarasakam. I want only you, nothing else. Krishna reciprocates accordingly. Okay, yeah. That's a short trailer of that section of the Bhagavatam. Beautiful section. We just covered half of the Damodarasakam. We will still have life, earth are accompanying you. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. I don't feel much of yes.
Yes.
Maybe you need to go to the bathroom, put water in your, if you want to make a 2 minute break. I won't make it one more, 2 more hours. It's, I will try to be, we'll try to cover.
Yeah, the reference of those 5 or 10 verses again.
Chapter 9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
nine.
Yeah.
Canto 9.
Canto 9, sorry. Chapter 2. Chapter 4. Verses 63 to 68. Starting with famous verse, Aham Bhakta Paradino. Yeah, we did a study of that. It's in the YouTube channel in English. We did that a few, few years ago. Okay, we have decided that we'll put a pause to the sharing today. And in tomorrow, today's evening sharing, we will continue with the second, the last part, the last 4 verses of Sri Damodarasakam. Oh, you there? Thank you so much. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai. Sri Kartik Brata ki jai. Gaur Pramananda.